Welcome to the Round 14 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus. I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, Marcus. How you going, mate?
Mixed week of Supercoach for me.
How about you? That's not how I read it.
I'm happy with the score, but we had bloody two outs on the weekend, and I traded in Steve Johnson, caused me a donut in his first week back. So that's two times I traded in Steve Johnson, first time for 53 and a suspension, and the second time to cause me a donut. Very frustrating, but the team absolutely killed it. Bartel 152, Hearn 157, Goddard 157, Franklin 146, and I didn't really have a low score. Lowest was 69 from Hibbard, and Lewis Taylor came on for Beams and scored 101. So yeah, it was good apart from that, and gave me a huge score of 2,423, considering only 21 players played. So they average 115 points between them, which is massive. And yeah, helped me move up despite having a donut. So 354th for me. Really happy with the score.
Wow, that just blew me out of the water this week, mate. And I didn't have a donut in the end. That's quite disappointing, really. My score was 23-17. I had four players score lower than those players you mentioned, mate. And missed a bunch of the big scores. I did do a late trade of Beams to Libba, 142 points in the short term, but I'm sure that one could come back to bite me. Buddy Franklin's match-winning goal was pretty sick for my team. Forward line and back line really let me down, though, and back into the top 1,000, 829th overall. Done pretty well to fight to stay that high this year, I think, and Supercoach Coach up still holding on to the second-ranked league and only a couple hundred points behind now.
I think we closed 400 points in the 1 week. So, yeah, that was really good.
Whatever it takes, our friend Matt, sitting in seventh overall.
I thought Hearn's score was pretty decent score and that he did that once in a while. I thought Hearn had a big score in him, but Mark tells me that that's one of his biggest scores. So, we've been pumping him up for a while now on Supercoach Coach. Hope a few of the listeners jumped on. Faz was on as well on Hearn, and he's in only 2.3% of teams. So, it was really, really nice, unique score from him. We'll move on this week to just some questions again from social media, from facebook.com/supercoachcoach and @supercoachcoach. And of course, FBDonkey's @FBDonkey. And you can ask us questions for the week's podcast on those social media channels. So I'm going to just give a quick disclaimer. I'm not feeling too well. So apologies if there's any coughs or sniffles as we go along.
Oh, Marcus has the man flu.
Yeah, man flu it is.
Hope the missus is looking after you, mate.
All right, question from Mark Fleming. Assuming you're at full premium, would you be looking to first upgrade underperforming premiums or add better bench depth as a priority? So, interesting question, Mark. What do you think?
I'm going to go with the underperforming premium one. I've always been an advocate for getting those points on the field. I guess it depends a little bit how many trades you've got left. If you're going to be still making trades in that spot, you're probably looking at having seven or eight trades left maybe, and you might be looking to upgrade Higgins type or underperforming midfielder. You could get up to five. That's probably not going to cost very much money and get like a proper premium for that. So, yeah, I'd be getting those points on the field if I could.
I think you'd only really look to add bench depth if you're struggling to hit value, and then you're better off going for two average players rather than stretching your bench too thin. You don't want every line looking like Akers and Curry and Thurlow lining up for you. So,
but then bench cover actually goes up in value if you have those Akers types on the bench, because you can actually loophole them. So having a good bench player might be more beneficial in that case if you have the ability to loophole that player.
Absolutely. You don't want to go too thin, I suppose. It's a fine balance. Ideally, I think you'd want to have, what would you say, Mark? At least three playing bench players, ideally.
You want to have eight, really.
We're talking realistic scenario here, Mark.
Oh, realistic. because of the crappy situation in the rucks, yeah, you'd want to have one on each line, preferably, or at least a couple that could cover multiple lines. But like we saw on the weekend, you had Johnson and Beams out now. Because of the way that the emergency rule is structured, even if you had two players on your midfield bench that were playing, you might not have been able to cover. But it's not really uncommon to see two players out in the one line in 1 week with just 1 week injuries.
Yeah, and it certainly hurts when come in the form of late withdrawals. So.
That was ridiculous. Seriously, I know that you got a bit annoyed at the start that Johnson was out and you had a donut and stuff. But, like, just for the order of the games to happen, for them to be Sunday games, for those not to find out till an hour before the game, just put everyone in a really difficult spot.
And you know what the worst part is, Mark? I didn't actually have to make the trade with the players that was being traded out and traded in. The only reason I had to pull the trigger was because Dangerfield was the MPP switch man and he played on the Saturday. So I had to pull the trade trigger earlier and it was extra frustrating because the player, I didn't even have to pull the trade trigger if not for that MPP switch. So hopefully that doesn't happen to us again this season, Mark. But it's good to note that MPP can seriously help you out in those situations. If I had a MPP player like Honeychurch instead of Akers, I could have saved myself a donut by getting to play an Ambrose or Impey type off my forward bench instead. So we'll move on to the next question here, Mark. And Jonathan Crockett wants to know what to do with Cochin. What would you be doing with Trent Cochin? He's seriously underperforming, and traditionally we back our premiums, but it's really not good enough. He's not even averaging 100, Mark. 97, hasn't hit the ton in the last 4 weeks.
That's just ridiculous. He seems to be pretty reliable for an 80-odd. on the weekend, Crowley went to Deledio. Richmond were kind of in that game for a decent amount of time. This is the sort of game that Cochin should be pumping out 110 easily. I have no idea why he didn't. Remember, I'm pretty sure earlier in the year he did have a decent ankle injury or something. And you can sort of use that as an excuse, but this has been going on for a really long time now. Like we talked about it in earlier podcasts that this was happening last year. He's played 12 games this year and he has 4 scores over 100. That would have been inconceivable to say that Cochin would do that at the start of the year. Is he a premium anymore? Would I be trading him out? I think Richmond have a decent draw coming up. So I guess it goes back to the first question of the show, which was, should you be upgrading underperforming premiums? Cochin could come good. He could have a huge second half of the season. I think he's done it before. Based on what we've seen, that looks a long way off. It would be a huge surprise if it happened. So if I had the trades, then yes, I would be upgrading Cochin.
It's a bit unfortunate. I think he's the sort of player that would really score so much better in a team that was playing much better football. He is a really good, classy player, you know, across the board. And he was that number 2 draft pick. He's an absolute gem. He's their captain. But as a contested player, I don't think he's as strong as some of the best contested beasts in the game. And unless Richmond are going to be pitching in to help Cochin out, he's not going to get any of the outside ball either. So, yeah, it doesn't seem to be scoring any points. Richmond don't ever put him in a position where he's going to get a couple of goals to help them win the game. I definitely recommend trading him out if I had him. And
such a strange player. He'll go missing for like 20 minutes in a game, and then he'll get a possession off the half-back flank, and he'll just, whenever he gets the ball, he just sprints to go and get a return possession. And he'll get 5 possessions in a minute, and then you won't see him again for another 20 minutes. Just having a really strange year and not taking hold of many games at all.
Next question we have here is from Blair Dewsbury, and he's asking about another Richmond player, Anthony Miles. Mark, he scored 83, 108. Both 2 good scores, averaging 95. But the thing is, he comes at a slightly more expensive price tag, 246K. What do you reckon?
The question I think asks, is he good for the bench, is that right?
Yeah, bench cover.
For bench cover. So I think that he's probably not going to score well enough to get onto the ground. So I guess in the situation, you might be looking at maybe an Akers upgrade to provide cover. That's only going to cost you $80,000 if you just got that sitting there. Or if you got Hallahan, you could make $50,000 out of it. Depending on where that money could be better spent, I actually don't mind that move so much. I was surprised that they left him in the reserves so long. Even at Western Sydney, he was always racking up huge numbers, especially in the reserves, and you just expected him to come in and be a stats beast one day. So I think he had like 8 touches in the first 10 minutes on the weekend, and that's not completely out of the blue for him. It's pretty standard. So yeah, I do expect him to be able to rack up big numbers at AFL level. I did expect Richmond to play him a fair bit earlier, and I expect him to have a reasonably long career. I would expect him to play every game for the rest of the year. Like, why would not Richmond not play him and try and get some game time into him?
Pretty fair assessment, Mark. And yeah, it's a very situational pick, obviously, at that price tag. So if the glove fits, yeah, I think he's a reasonable selection. Next question here is from Jester5. Mark, he's asking about the player that we've been talking about for a few weeks now. Is Stefan Martin a must-have? So he's on the bubble now. He scored 107 last week, so both scores have hit the ton. Going to burst in value at negative 69 break-even. So even if he gets injured, as long as he plays this week, he will go up in price a little bit. What do you reckon, Mark? Is he a must-have, or does the injury risk slide him out of that category?
We did spend a lot of time on him last week. I think that the injury history combined with Leuenberger coming back makes him not a must-have. The Thurlow situation would definitely increase his chances of coming into my team if I had Thurlow on the bench, because you'd expect one of the rucks to go down at some stage or need covering at some stage. But I think he's a pretty solid pick. He looks pretty good out on the ground, and looks like he should score. He should average at least 80, you would think, from here. Are you a bit more bullish on him?
Yeah, I think if you have Thurlow, he's a must-have. I think I've said that before, and I think that his two scores keep him in that category, obviously. But I don't think he's a must-have because of his injury history if you don't have Thurlow. If you have Derek's and you still have quite a few trades, and you don't have Thurlow, I think Martin is still a must-have because can easily trade Derek's to Martin and bring in Thurlow through your forward line with a cash downgrade in the future and be able to swing Martin back into your forward line. And so if you have trades, then you know you might as well make use of that Derek's cash as well. If you have trades or if you have Thurlow, I think he is a must-have.
He has got a bit of a stiffer competition this week with Sandilands.
And it does sound like Leuenberger is still on track to come back, but there's a little bit more of a question mark on Brown as well, so he still has a forward spot. It'll be interesting to see whether or not he can stay injury-free for the year, and more importantly, Mark, whether or not any of the key rucks go down in the second half of the year, because that's probably the main question. If you can get away without any injuries in your rucks for the rest of the year, I mean, Martin probably isn't a must-have. I only have him in that category because I assume that one of your rucks will go down and you need cover. And that's only because I've been burnt badly in the past. If you haven't and you're confident that your rucks can make it through, then you know maybe you don't think that you need to take a player like Stefan Martin into your team.
It was nice to hear Lyon say today that Fremantle are not in a position to be resting Pavel Sandilands, and both of them are feeling pretty good and he expects them to play out the season.
I think it's good that the league's just, it's so competitive now all through the ladder that it's going to be pretty hard to see a max exodus of restings like there has been in seasons past. And we still have one more bye coming up for the players as well. So you'd be a really conservative and you'd be in really quite a good position if you can rest a raft of senior players in any one game in the run home, I would have thought. Okay, next question, Mark, and it's from Tim on Twitter, Sgrammet. Who's the best premium forward to bring in this week, Buddy Parker, Harvey, or Gray, Mark? He's listed some of the high-scoring types there. Do you like those players?
Out of the four, I probably like Parker next week. Does seem to have tapered off slightly, but I expect him to come back and average 100, and he's going to be about the 460K mark, so that's pretty cheap. Gray just keeps getting it done, only 93 on the weekend, and only 93 is a low score for him, and he dominated in parts of that game, so I was really surprised to see his score only at 93. So, and Boomer Harvey, gee, I could have taken Harvey instead of Stevie J when Rioli went down, and that would have completely changed my season. I would have scored a lot more points and been in a completely different situation right now. And I mean, he got tagged on the weekend by Rory Laird, and Laird followed him around pretty closely, but Harvey just kept managing to rack up the possessions and seems in great form.
I think it's hard to recommend the Harvey Gray types because they're above 570K, and that's how much.
Very expensive.
Yeah, that's how much you're paying for midfielders, and even then, we say that they're a bit riskier when they get to that sort of price category. So personally, I wouldn't touch them. We know that Harvey can be panged by the occasional low score because he does get tagged, so you wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of that after paying 600K for him. And
like I was with Stevie J, you mean?
Yeah. And then you've got Robbie Gray with his injury history, and if you're picking up Robbie Gray, you would have wanted to pay 450 for him or 500 for him, not 570 close to the end of the season. Yeah, I think Parker's probably the standout, like Mark mentioned. But
hey, Buddy.
Sorry?
Would you bring Buddy in at his price? It's basically his starting price again that he's got back to, the $480,000.
Sydney are playing some really good football, and I mean, Buddy's low in the last 5 weeks been 71 and high of 146. So you can argue he's coming into some really good form. He's certainly getting a lot of shots on goal. I think that ideally you'd pick a midfielder over a forward, even in the forward line, or especially in the forward line. And so I think Parker over Franklin for me. But Franklin has the potential to average 110 and Parker probably doesn't have that potential. So I guess pick your poison. One's riskier with more reward and one's definitely going to get you 100 points, you would have thought, for the rest of the season. Anyone else below that price? We've got Hawk at 450k and he's in some decent form.
He's in really, really good form. I think that falls into the same category of key position forward though. Cyril.
Oh, yes, that's right. Cyril Rioli, 440k. And we actually did get a question about him from Jared Owen. He wants to know whether he's worth the risk due to his injury history. Scored 77 and 89 in his first 2 weeks back. And his first week, he got subbed off because of the injury management. So,
and on the weekend, I think in the third quarter, he didn't touch the ball until the last couple of minutes because he got reported right at the start of the quarter. And that might have put him off the game for a little bit. Obviously got off on that because he took a swing but didn't make any contact. Got to have some worries about the injury history from here. But, I mean, good price. We've both been burnt. And now that we're getting lower on trades, we're looking at much more durable players than Cyril. But does have a really big upside and fun to watch. So if you've still got trades left and you want to take a risk at 440,000, it seems decent.
There's Westhoff from Port Adelaide. He's obviously a risk, but he'd be a unique one at 430. So Port obviously playing good footy.
Getting even cheaper. What about going all the way down to Wingard?
Good one, Mark. 390k and just bottomed out now after that concussion affected score of 10 from round 11. So
concussion and 3 shit quarters of football.
Yeah. So his break even's 29 now. What do you reckon about Wingard, Mark? Is he worth the pickup? He is an MPP, so that swing flexibility that we talked about certainly plays to his favour.
You'd have to be really struggling on cash or trades, I think. He's got the potential to average 100. He's a really good football player, and I think that the difference this year is that he really has been posted much more as a forward than in the midfield because they do bat so deep already, the Port Adelaide midfield, and I guess with Gray playing so many games, they really haven't needed to put Wingard in the midfield at all. So playing as that forward, he can go missing in games a lot more. He's really, really good when the game is on the line, which can get you a lot of points. He should average at least 85, and for 390,000, that seems like a pretty good get. Yeah, I just have concerns about what his ceiling is this year because of his role.
He's about 60, 70K underpriced probably. And so from that perspective, if you're looking for value and you're looking for an MPP, I don't think you're going to get a better option than Wingard, and he's going to bounce back in price next week. And we've mentioned him a few times now because he's been at pretty attractive price for a few weeks now, but haven't been quite huge fans since Dunny's come on and sort of quashed him as a Port supporter because of his role, and Mark sort of backed that up with his statements today. So if he suits your team structure, bring him in because you might need the value or you might need a bench cover, but if not, you'd probably look to a Parker type instead. Any of the key position forwards tickle your fancy? I'm just going to read a few out at the cheaper range: 380 Rewalt, 380 Walker, 400 Kennedy. Any of the key position forwards that you like on the run home? Petrie?
You certainly wouldn't be picking them for your league team because they're just so inconsistent. Josh Kennedy's been killing it in some games and just going missing in the other ones. I think that out of them, the one that probably interests me the most is Petrie, especially with Tarrant coming back, because that means that they're not going to play Dorr, or they might not play Dorr or Curry. So Petrie will play a backup ruck and a key forward as well, kicking some goals, and he did show a bit of form a couple of weeks ago. So, and North do have a really easy draw, so I think that Petrie's the one that I would be looking at out of any of those.
Nice. Yeah, I think that certainly surprised me a bit because he's probably shown the least out of them, but you bring the key position forwards for the big scores when they do turn it on. So he's in my draft team, Mark, so I'm certainly hoping he turns it around. I think out of those, I wouldn't mind Walker probably would be my selection of them.
Okay. I'd probably take Lukey Bruce over all of them. 415, had a bit of a slow run of form of late, but I think he'll get back in form. He's playing really well. He gets heaps of midfield time these days. I think he'll come good.
All right. And the last question we have, Mark, is asking about, is it worth downgrading to a player like Honeychurch if it can facilitate an upgrade like Higgins to 5? So downgrading to a non-playing rookie that has MPP so that you can upgrade a marginal player like a Higgins-Suckling type? What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's totally something that I would do, and it's something that I've done in my back line by bringing in Jaden Hunt. Very similar situation. And Honeychurch is someone that could come into my side. It depends who your other bench player is. Like, if you have Lloyd or someone that's not playing in your other position and you bring in Honeychurch, then that can expose you, even if you've got Shenton in the mids, because laid outs it could really expose you to not having that automatic cover up forward. I think that I would definitely very strongly consider Honeychurch because he plays for the Bulldogs and they play from here a lot of Sunday games, so you can use him for loopholing a bit. But I think that Shane Kirsten kicked 6 on the weekend for Geelong. Honeychurch kicked 5 for the Doggies and has been in really good form, so might come in. But we've been sort of waiting on Kirsten all season, and it really does look like Geelong needs another key forward from somewhere. They can't just leave Hawkins to kick all the goals. So the fact that Kirsten's come back and so quickly kicked 6 means he might be someone to consider as well.
I really like those two suggestions there, Mark. Kirsten's a good one to bring up because Geelong have a really good history of blooding our first-round rookies, so hopefully he gets a gig sooner rather than later. That probably wraps up this week's show, Mark. There's less pressing issues to talk about as the weeks go on. We're sort of happy if we dodge any major injury bullets as we get on to the middle to late part of the season.
Yeah, it was good not to have to spend a whole show on a Job type.
Yeah.
Sort of screws everyone. Pretty disappointed that you bleeped out my Job rant, mate. It was much better.
Oh, I didn't want to, but on iTunes we are a family show, so I didn't want to have to change that.
That's all right. I'll
we'll release it an uncut anyway. Show
at the end of the year.
Yeah, we probably should. And yeah, it was a pity they didn't get up. It was a cracking game just as a spectacle.
I've managed to avoid you bringing up the Melbourne game the whole show, mate. Let's not do it now because I'll just go on another rant.
Okay, all right. We'll keep it at that, guys. I hope you enjoyed Game of Thrones. It was a exciting season finale.
Sick.
I think it's fitting that we end the show with a Game of Thrones reference. All the best to your trades and your scores this week, guys. And we'll catch you again for the Round 15 show next week.
Both in the top 1,000, mate. Good job.